All right, everybody. Hello and welcome back. This is another episode of In Liberty and Health. And today's topic, I was going to do a Sunday coffee, but then I completely forgot that I actually had my guest scheduled for today, which is kind of funny because I did his show recently and there was a little bit of a scheduling conflict, but I'm glad we got everything set up and I'm glad that we got everything set up for today because it was very apt, the title of today's show and what was kind of on my mind. And that's Touching Grass, which I think I did a pretty good job on the thumbnail. I thought it was worth a good few chuckles, but when I was on my guest show, probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago, it might have even been longer than that. I'm so bad with time anymore. We talked a lot about networking and developing a good life for yourself, and I really wanted to touch on that again because if you've been following me recently, I've talked a lot about Rock for Life, which is the charity event that we host here in Pennsylvania, and just how important that's been for me over the last 7 or 8 years, being able to play it every single year in different bands. And then now obviously over the course of the last 5 or 6 years in the same band, being one of the headlining acts and just networking with wonderful people all for a wonderful cause. So I'm sure we'll get into some of this kind of stuff today, but before we get into that, please head into the description below. We are streaming on Rumble right now too. This is my first episode on Rumble in quite a while. I'm trying to get the backlog on there and start putting new episodes going forward there. I'm not streaming on Facebook anymore because it's like a dead platform. So Twitter, YouTube, and Rumble, feel free to subscribe all those places, preferably go over to the Rumble and hit subscribe. But yeah, go to all the links below where you can find, I guess, everything he's got going on. Of course, all the links for me, everything I've got going on. Go to tigerfitness.com, use code Kyle at checkout to get the best supplements. I used the sour gummy pre-workout, the Ruckus Ruckus pre-workout. Absolutely love the flavor and the way I feel after it. So can't recommend you guys go check out that stuff enough. Of course, Fox and Sons and Deem Fit through the link below. And without further ado and all my shilling out of the way, let's get right into today's show.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
All right, everybody, and welcoming to the show, my dear friend, Meta Prime. How you doing, man?
Doing well, man. Love the intro. Do you sell those coffee mugs?
No, I wish, man. I really wish I did sell some kind of coffee mugs, but I know that is my band, though, playing in the introduction. I tried to make sure I get like everything nice in there. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, yeah, no, thanks for having me on. Excited to chat.
Yeah, man. Well, like I said in the introduction, when I was on your show, we talked mostly about networking and all that kind of stuff. And as I also said in the introduction, I just did our charity concert last night. And it's so nice to just take a breather and not worry about anything, not worry about checking your phone for the latest hot takes. It was kind of funny last week when, you know, the whole Ron situation kind of broke out. I walked on stage, and then when I got off stage, I now realize that we lived in, like, not a different world, but something pretty substantial happened, and kind of reminds you of, like, ignorance is bliss, but it's not always necessarily, it's like a bad thing. Sometimes you just need to be like, I don't have the mental bandwidth for this right now, and I'm just going to live my life and be happy right now.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting to separate those areas of your life, kind of realize the impact they have on each other. Because I think, to your point, a lot of people get caught up in the entertainment value that is international politics and the online discourse. I forget who I was talking to about this, but it's similar to, I used to be a big World of Warcraft nerd growing up, like back in, man, it was like early 2000 aughts. And, like it was one of those things where, you know, if I get into something, I want to do it at like the highest level, right? Like if I'm playing WoW, I want to be like with the best guild doing server first stuff, you know, whatever it is, have the best gear. And, you know, there were points where, you know, I think it was like after the second expansion or something like that, where I was just like, yeah, I'm taking a break and whatever. And like you go from either like really into it or just not into it at all. Doesn't matter, you know, like completely, you know, just leaves your thought space. And I think that's kind of like what politics is for a lot of people, where like they're in it. They want to be part of the discourse and, you know, keeping track of everything that's happening and whatnot. But the second that they have like a vacation or they log off or whatever it is, like they realize, oh, this doesn't matter. I mean, there's definitely things you want to pay attention to, like, you know, obviously COVID was a big deal and a lot of other stuff like that. But, you know, I think for the most part, we could pretty much get by without being terminally online.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I entitled the stream today Touching Grass because I threw out a tweet yesterday saying grass, I touched it today. And it, like I said, it is really nice to kind of unplug yourself. But at the same time, you know, there is just that constant need, like, man, I really want to keep updated on everything that's going on right now. And I think like a healthy thing to do is that, like, if you're on vacation or something like that, realize that you're doing that and don't feel like ashamed, but just be like, oh, like, this is something that I should probably just try to, like, I did this, I got the information I needed. Now I'm going to go back and sit on the beach and have a margarita. Or, you know, for me, I just checked Twitter and now I'm going to leave my phone, you know, out of sight, out of mind. My band's about to play a 45, you know, 2 hour set, whatever. And just be present there, because I think, like, I'm sure you see this all the time, cause I know you travel quite a bit and I'm interested to hear about some of that. People all the time, right? Just on their phone 24/7. And I get it. I am not above that whatsoever. Sometimes good to just be like, no, I have to just put that away.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's like at our core as humans, we're very social creatures, right? And there's this element of like, what's going on in the network, you know, who's saying what about what thing, you know, what's the latest gossip, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it scratches that lizard brain, because, you know, back when we were really tight knit small communities, you know, if stuff was happening or things were going on, like people wanted to know about it. And, you know, I think that that's kind of like a core point in a lot of my content is, you know, we need to get back to caring more about what our immediate local communities and families and, you know, networks and fraternities are about. We need to rebuild those structures because we've effectively replaced those with this kind of like terminally online space. And, you know, there's some advantages to that. I don't want people to think that, you know, there's no value to being online. I think that you can meet a lot of really cool people. I think a lot of us, when we first got online, it was really cathartic and reassuring to realize that we weren't, you know, insane, right? That we saw all these problems in the world and we were like, oh, am I the only one, you know? And so I think there's a lot of value to the online sphere, but like anything, it's how you manage it, how you use it. And then also, you know, trying to realize, hey, this energy, this desire that we feel to be connected, like the reason that we're going for it online is because we don't have it, you know, in our day to day. And that's something we have to build. And it's part of the reason I really enjoyed our conversation is I feel like you're pretty active and running these events and getting people together and doing stuff in your real life. And I think, you know, if we are going to have like online people who are kind of, you know, sharing their lives with other people and, you know, that kind of have some responsibilities or like a role model. And, you know, I think that, you know, having more people be kind of exposed to and oriented towards, you know, like community building, touching grass, like, you know, being active local, I think that's only a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I'm sure you hear people say this kind of stuff all the time where it's like, oh, social media is the problem. It's like, I don't think that it's the social media itself. I understand where you're coming from because you're kind of looking at like the net result of it, but I'm of the perspective that like a lot of things can be tools, right? When people start talking about Ozempic or something like that, I'm like, oh, this is a tool. This is a tool for people who have a really difficult time managing their food intake. And this helps them block off one of those things that's going to help them, you know, get to their goal, which is weight loss, right? Social media in this respect, when you look at it as a tool, it's like, oh, I can use this much like you do, where it's like, I'm going to go meet up with people, network, and build community this way. Like the goal is, it's almost looking at it as like a funnel, right? This is meant to get all these people together and then bring them into one place. So, you know, basically like the way that we would do it for the band would be like, hey, you know, we're going to advertise this out on social media. We'll put up some clips or some spicy pictures, some memes or something like that, and be like, hey, you should come see Rock for Life and then donate to the cause, you know, maybe buy band merch or something like that. I get the vibe that you generally do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you hit on the key point, which is intentionality. Mm-hmm. It's how do you use it for your own ends? Because I think a lot of people get online and then they just find themselves doom scrolling, or, you know, it's like 3 hours have passed and they're like, where did my life go? So having intentionality with how you're using your online time, I think that's really important. And, you know, realizing, I think it's also like creator versus consumer, right? Are you out on the social media platform putting out content that you think is like interesting and engaging? Are you being selective with the people that you're kind of connecting with? I think that's another big thing, is a lot of times for content creators, they make this mistake, especially with like group chats. I made this mistake a bunch of times building group chats, which is you have people who are really actively involved and it's like, great. But if those people are bringing like a weird energy to the space, or they're trying to kind of monopolize people's time, or, you know, whatever, they're not participating in a collaborative conversation. The right move is really to kick them or to remove them or talk to them about it or whatever it is, because what typically ends up happening is people will then come in and those people kind of monopolize the space and push out other people that you actually want to have who would be, you know, involved in contributing otherwise. And so I think that there's a lot to be said about how to interact with online technology correctly, so that you are making best use of your time. You want to kind of, one of the big things we talk about is like signal to noise ratio, right? So if you're online and you're just kind of consuming a lot of noise, you know, how valuable is that? Like, how do you get more signal? And I think that's why people have been moving more into group chats, right? Because you're kind of, you know, cultivating a very specific type of community of good people. And, you know, especially if you're meeting those people and building relationships with them and doing, you know, interesting stuff and projects together and whatnot, right? Then there's a lot of value. Whereas if you're just, I don't know, I'll get invited into some of these group chats and it's just a bunch of people I don't know. And I'm just like, I don't have the bandwidth to like get to know these people or whatever it is. So I think that there's a lot to be said for you, like you're pointing out, using technology correctly in a way that's going to benefit you. And I think there's a lot of people that I run into, and it's just kind of like a broad problem. Like I work as a tech recruiter in my professional life, and so I do a lot of interviewing, and one of the big questions I always like to ask people, because I feel like it really demonstrates, you know, kind of their ability level and intelligence and also kind of like wisdom, is to say, you know, what are you looking for in your career? Why are you applying to this job? Right? And you know, you're kind of looking for the intentionality around that. And I think similarly, if people are online and you haven't kind of done this check-in in a while, it might be a good time to do it. Just ask yourself, like, what am I trying to get out of this? Like, what is the purpose for me doing this? Because, I mean, inevitably, we're all spending a lot of time online. And if it's just, you know, if you don't really know why you're doing it, you know, that then you're probably not getting as much out of it as you could, or you're probably, you know, wasting your time, you know? And so that intentionality. So for me, it is networking, right? It's building relationships with people. There's also value to when you're creating content or, you know, writing articles, putting stuff out, like it helps you think about things, right? A lot of people, you know, we you know, it's like, as much as a lot of writers and content creators are out, you know, up there talking about stuff, like, they're still figuring it out, unless they're getting talking points from somebody else. But you know, that they're like, that's their process too. So I think there's a lot of value. It's just people have to know, you know, what value they're trying to get out of it.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important. And one of the best parts about kind of networking with different people, especially with different views, is that you can kind of always adapt and evolve and figure out when you're full of shit, right? And this is something that I constantly try to do, is constantly try to be like, okay, am I wrong in this respect here? Because if you go back to episode probably one of this podcast, right? So all the way 419 episodes ago, you could probably find things in the first, let's say, 50 episodes that I would have changed my mind on from back then until now. And I feel like that's a healthy thing, is you're more, you know, if you're online in this sphere, you know, the take selling economy, if you will, and you're not updating the information that you've received and maybe changing your view on the world from time to time, it's like, okay, well, are you really doing your due diligence? Or are you just trying to stay comfortable? And this is what a lot of people, I think, do. I obviously hail from more of the libertarian world, but I always see people like, oh, that's statist, that's collectivist, that's authoritarian, that's this, that's that, they're not real libertarian. It's like, well, what use is that? Like, if you're just going to read online about everything, then like, is this really producing your end goal, which if you're a libertarian would be to have a more, a more free society, is screeching about the non-aggression principle and how this person's not a real libertarian, is that really, once again, productive towards your ends? And the answer, I think, is no. I see this in like the dissident right spheres, where it's like somebody will have like a Jewish last name or something like that, right? And they're like, oh my God, we can't talk to this person, he's subversive. And I'm like, I understand, but like, do you guys align for the most part? Like, if there's severe disagreement, okay, but like, where do you start and where do you stop? Where is it just meaningless bickering, and when is it actually productive? And I see a lot of like useless bickering, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the first article that I ever wrote was live not in opposition to evil but pursuit of good, right? And the idea of that was, I just saw so many people online who were like mad, and justifiably mad, right? Like, the more that I've thought about how kind of broken our mainstream, you know, society is, as far as like the ideologies that it pushes and the concepts and all the ideas, like, it's infuriating, it's heartbreaking. It's because, you know, that there's a lot of good people out there who, you know, want to do right by themselves, by the people around them, by society, you know, under God, all these things, but because we're just so lost from what is truly healthy, it's really hard to do that. But you know, the problem I initially saw when I got online was just so many people were consumed by their frustration, and they spent all of their time, you know, seeking out, you know, kind of like accounts that were saying dumb things and just dunking on them. And it's like, all right, sure, there's value to bringing the discourse out and people kind of, you know, seeing that on the timeline and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't matter if you aren't building something that's good, right? Like, you know, okay, say we destroy all of the bad parts of society, right? Well, okay, well, what are you going to do with your life? You know, like, now you have nothing to complain about now. Like, what do you go do? And you know, more importantly, I think that there's nothing stopping you from building those things now.
Right.
Like, yes, the world is tough. Yes, things are unfair. You know, women are largely horrible, and like, we're taxed to oblivion, and you know, the economy sucks, and you know, the real racists are the left, you know, yada yada, right? It's like, fine. Are you going to have that stop you from, you know, living a good life that you think is, you know, like, I don't think you should. Right. And so I think similarly, you know, when I think of, when we're talking about all these things of like, all right, how do you, you know, like people being online and just arguing and all this kind of stuff. It's like, okay, well, how can you use the online discourse in a positive way? And I think too, if you're putting out kind of like a positive message. One of the threads that I wrote very early on getting on Twitter was this, how kind of like Twitter is the shelling point, so to speak. I don't think I didn't use that term, but there's this old recruiting question of like, you're going to meet a friend in New York City, you lose contact, but you know, like that day is the day you're supposed to meet your friend. Where do you go to like meet your friend? Assuming that they're also going to kind of be thinking along, you know, the same lines of like, all right, we're going to just go somewhere and we'll try to meet up. And the answer is you go to Grand Central Station at noon, you know, right under that like main center lobby clock tower thing, right? Because that's just, it's the middle of the travel, you know, it's the travel hub of New York City. It's very iconic. It's easy to get to, all of that kind of stuff, right? And I think that's kind of what we have here, is you have a lot of people who see what's wrong with the world around them, and they're like, I need to find other people who get it. And so that was just kind of Twitter for a lot of us, and now Twitter, now X, kind of thing, right? And we started to build these relationships and get to know each other. And then through that, you know, you build a reputation of like, you know, how good is your, you know, how good are your takes? Like, how well do you interact with people? You know, are you willing to, you know, contribute and synergize and all this kind of stuff, right? And, you know, to me, it's like, if you're putting out the right message that resonates with people, well, guess what? It's like, the if you're putting out what you genuinely are and what you believe and what you hope for, and you put out this optimistic, positive vibe, well, the people who you're going to end up connecting with are also on that wavelength of being positive and optimistic and like wanting to do good things, right? And so I think that, you know, to your point, like, don't like getting caught up in like little tiffs and all this kind of stuff. Like, you know, obviously I do a little bit of like drama, you know, arguing on the timeline, but to me, the way I see that is we're all kind of representing different philosophies and ideas. And you know, when I see something that's contrary to my own philosophy or idea, like I'll say something, I'll speak out. Right. I never thought like, oh, that guy's like a big account, I have to like play nice or whatever. Right. To me, it was like, they're saying something I disagree with, I'm going to say that. Right. And it was funny because initially when I got on and I started like, you know, building relationships and getting to know people and getting into the group chats, there would be times where I'd like speak out against certain accounts and be like, ah, I don't like that take, and here's why. People be like, oh, you can't say that. Like, that's for you. Like, you know, you can't counter signal him on the timeline. I was like, why not? Like, did we not come here to have a discussion? And then I realized like how much there was like this whole social element and stuff like that. And to me, you have to have a bounty mindset, right? You have to have the mindset of like, if I'm putting out a good vibe and this is what I want, this is what I am excited about. If people don't like that, that's fine, right? Like, I'm, you know, I think we're all pretty used to being hated by the left and, you know, other people out there, right? And so, you know, if you have people who don't resonate with whatever your authentic message is, well, then, you know, they're probably not going to be people worth getting to know or spend time with or care about or whatever, right? To your point, there's value in discussion and kind of learning from each other and having those things. But you quickly find out who are the people who are worth talking with, because they're going to try to look for like collaborative conversations. And like, that's, I guess, the point that I'll land on is a lot of the time when I see people have, you know, arguments or disagreements about things, the biggest mistake that people will make in those situations is if you frame your stance in a way such that the person you're having the conversation with, your interlocutor, if they're going to agree with you, they also have to like basically agree that like they were an idiot, or, you know, like, or they're morally wrong or something, right? Like, if you're like, oh, you're an idiot and you just don't understand, like, blah, 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 here's how it is, right? You framed it so that it's impossible for them to agree with you, because no one wants to like admit that they're an idiot, right? And so you always have to frame things in ways, you know, have conversations where people agreeing with you is like, you know, it's not difficult for them to do, right? Like, you know, you can kind of work collaboratively towards a solution, as opposed to it's like this or that, right? And so I guess the point being is, when you're engaging online, or at least the way I see it, is like, I don't take things personally. You know, I try to think about the discussions that we have on the timeline as kind of like illustrations of our own philosophy, and that we just like have those out for other people to read, right? Like, you're not really trying to convince the other person. Like, the other person represents some philosophy or idea or whatever. You're trying not to be like a douchebag, right? Because I mean, the best situation is you're having an argument with someone you know is a representation of an ideology you disagree with, and one of their followers is reading you and they're like, oh, this guy seems pretty, you know, chill. Like, they're not flipping out, they're not being an asshole about these things. Like, they're making some reasonable points. Like, maybe I'll look a little bit more into this, right? Like, that is the best case scenario that you want to facilitate. And I think that, you know, a lot of people get caught up in kind of like an ego thing of like, oh, you know, I have to flex on this guy, I have to like prove that he's wrong, right? Like, they take things personally. And that's why, like, you know, like, things have like, sometimes it escalates and gets into doxing and all that kind of stuff, which is no good. But I think if more people kind of looked at the online sphere as like, what am I getting out of this? If I can put off like, you know, put out like a positive energy, right? Like, I'm going to attract the right people. I'm not going to like, you know, get aggressive with, you know, people unnecessarily, all that kind of stuff. I think there's a lot of value to approaching it that way, because then, you know, it's not going to, you know, it's not going to like devolve into stuff and, you know, take up too much of your headspace. And, you know, it's like, yeah, people take it a little too seriously sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I hate to see the mutuals kind of like flame out on one another. And I kind of had a little bit of this experience yesterday. And this was more with like people I knew in person, but like, I had like long, good conversations with people that like removed me on Facebook over dumb stuff. And it's not like I take that shit personally, much to your point. It's like, if we have a disagreement, even political, you name it, I don't take any of this stuff personally. Like, I can talk to people I vehemently disagree with, and we could still probably find some areas of agreement. And even if I disagree with you, I could still generally get where most people are coming from. So like, when I see people just like try to flame out on me, I'm like, bro, like, we're cool. We could still sit down and have a beer. Let's talk this over. Yeah. Everything's good, man. Like, I'm not mad at you. You don't have to be mad at me. Like, I harbor no ill will. And it's kind of sad, because I'm sure you've observed this pattern as well. When I put out what I feel is good information, if I talk about, you know, something in the health and fitness world, something about foreign policy, that's an observation that most people, at least I haven't seen other people make, it almost gets no traction. But when I start talking shit about Tim Pool, Russell Brand, or some, you know, hollowed out skin suit of a e-dude, e-influencer, people just go nuts for that kind of stuff. And you got to kind of accept like, that's just the nature of Twitter. But at the same time, it's also kind of frustrating, because it's like, no, actually, I want to share like a positive vision with people. I want to share good information with people, because ultimately my goal with my content, kind of like you were alluding to a little bit earlier, is like, I want to put out a message that's going to change the way that people think, or maybe helps them improve their lives. Like, you know, I'm going to give you information about health and fitness that may give you a little bit of a different perspective that you can incorporate in your life. And maybe you add 5 pounds on your bench press. Maybe you lost those 10 pounds that you were struggling to lose. Like, maybe this changed your life for the better. Like, that's my goal in making content, where I think you probably see some people. I think you highlighted what the fuck was the dude's name? HP Zero Lovecraft or whatever it is. Like, I I really don't pay that much attention to this guy. I've seen some takes. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's reasonable. And then, you know, a comment like I saw today, I'm 1,000 times more relevant and better than you are, or something like that. And like, the worst parts of me have been tempted to say that to people. And then I have like this thing in my mind that stops me when I'm being a retard and like when I'm getting angry, and says like, this isn't you. Like, you need to shut up. You need to relax. You're in the wrong here. The jealous part of us, which I think every person has, sometimes you have to take a step back and realize like, oh, this is the worst part of me that's trying to speak to somebody right now. And whatever I'm going to say in this moment isn't going to be productive, and it's just going to make the situation worse. So maybe I should just shut up and learn my lesson.
Yeah. I mean, the whole flexing intelligence thing is it's an interesting conversation. There's definitely like a metagame there where it's like, look, if you have to tell someone that you're intelligent, more intelligent than they are, there's a few problems with that. Like, obviously, first off is like, no one reacts well to someone being like, I'm smarter than you. Yeah. Right. Like everyone's like default reaction to that is like, go fuck yourself. Like, I don't care. Yeah. And part of it is if you're smart enough, if you are actually smart, one of the things you very quickly realize is like telling people that you're smart never leads to a good outcome. Right. So it's really something that like people will do when they don't feel like they have like a smart way to kind of come back in a conversation, or they're frustrated, mm-hmm. or they're just like out of witty comebacks or whatever. They're just like, I'm smarter than you, so I don't have to care. And it's like, well, yeah, but if you took like the time to make that post, like you do care to some degree. Right.
Right.
And I get that too. Cause like, I don't know. I am I'm proud of who I am. Right. And I think like, that's another thing is that I've written a little bit about like SOFONs, and I'll probably write more about this concept, but it's, and I think we might've even chatted about this the last time we talked, but it's basically misconceptions in society that keep us from the truth. Cause I think fundamentally that's what we're all after. We're all after the truth, because the better you understand reality, the better you can act practically within it, right? That towards the good, right? Because to your point earlier, when you were saying that, you know, you can usually understand where people are coming from, I think 99.999% of people, like, they think that they're doing the right thing.
Right.
You know, and your goal isn't to, you know, to tell them that they're wrong, right? Your goal is to, I think, like, the best way that you can build, like, diplomatically, like, relationships with people is to understand, well, what are you really trying to, like, what is the common good that we can both agree on, right? And then where can we highlight, you know, those areas of agreement and those areas for collaboration, and then talk, you know, about philosophy or ideology or strategy from that standpoint. And so I think that, like, a lot of people, if you're trying to, like, flex your intelligence, or if you're trying to do that, you know, it's almost like, you're not actually going to get to that positive place together. And so it's kind of clearly a signal of, you know, usually when people flame out like that, it comes from like a personal place of like lack of confidence. But I guess the point that I'm getting at is I don't think it's wrong to be proud of who you are. I don't think it's wrong, if you are intelligent, to know and operate in the world as if you are more intelligent than other people. I think it is extremely dangerous for a wise person to think that they're a fool, because, you know, then they're going to give fools too much credit, right? You know, that being said, there's a nuance to it, because, you know, I think you start to learn this kind of nuance of, well, you can have like a king who's not effective in being a king, right? A bad king is not as good as like a good peasant, right? Like you can live your life well, like people can live their lives well and be better than people who are more wealthy or have these heuristics, right? Like when I think of like Andrew Tate, right? Like there's a lot that I do not like about Andrew Tate, right? Yeah. And when I think of like the nice little, you know, little old lady who works at like our local grocery store as like the checkout gal, right? And she's just friendly and nice, and she does a good job, and she's just like a good person. And I've never seen her have like a bad interaction with anyone or whatever. I'm like, that woman is better than Andrew Tate, right? Like, because she's living her life in a way that is like authentic and real and positive. Like, you know, you kind of think of it as like, you know, if you're one of the analogies that I like to use a lot is like D&D, right? It's like, we're all playing D&D characters, and the goal of D&D is not to become the king and get all the money and the bitches and the cars and all that kind of stuff, right? Cool if that's part of your story and that's what you want to strive towards, like, you know, by all means. But, you know, when you kind of take that step back and you're like hanging out with your friends and you're playing this game, what's the thing that matters most? It's the story, right? Is the story interesting? Are the characters interesting? Are they making decisions that, like, you know, sometimes you play, you know, evil characters, but assuming that you're trying to play like good characters, right? Like, are the decisions those characters making admirable, right? Are they, you know, the best they can do in their position at that time? And I think that's very much how we should kind of like view the world, right? Is, you know, when I talk to people, I try to understand what, you know, what are you passionate about? What do you love? What do you care about? you know, like, and it doesn't have to be, they don't have to be changing the world. Like, one of my, the guys that I know locally in my area, I guess he recently got a house, and, I kind of went over one day, we were hanging out, just having like, some drinks and, you know, walking around his little, like, you know, his little property area. And he's talking about how, like, oh, you know, maybe I'll, you know, let the woods come in here, and I want to like fill this area out, and I might do some stuff here. We might move the barn over here. Right. And he's, you know, it's just really cool to kind of think about that, like, stewardship of the land, right. That, responsibility that he has to make his like little corner that he owns, you know, better and kind of nicer and, you know, fitting with the community, all that kind of stuff. And I think, like, that is the mindset that I think is so starkly contrasted by the people who are like, I'm intelligent and I'm super smart and stuff like that. It's like, okay. And this has always been the way that I judge people online for their philosophies. And I think this is an extremely strong heuristic. So, I wrote a thread recently about open-ended questions versus multiple choice, right? There's this idea when I was tutoring the SATs, they had the reading comprehension section. I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but basically, you know, you read a passage and then you get a question and have a few multiple choice answers. And the default strategy for that was you'd read the multiple choice answers. You'd read the question, then the multiple choice answers, and try to figure out which one was closest. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like judging each one individually, but that was really time consuming and ended up tricking a lot of people. Not very effective strategy. The best way to do it was to read the question, not look at the answers, come up with your own answer in your head, and then try to figure out which of the multiple choice was closest to the answer that you had picked. Right. Because you're not biasing yourself. You're not limiting your frame of understanding, to that like one area. And so if you can just say, like, what is the right thing that we should be doing right now? Right. Mm-hmm. What is the real solution? And this is why I have so much frustration with people like Curtis Yarvin and all these other guys. You know, people will like, you know, I made a post just before we got on about like low IQ women hate, right? There's that joke of like, oh, you know, all these low IQ anti-Semites, blah, 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 right? It's like, well, you know, when I think of things that are counterproductive, it's, well, the goal should be rebuilding families, communities, fraternities. That's where the strength is. Like, I cannot stress this enough, that we have this lens that we look through as, you know, modern Americans, modern Western men, that it's all about like career progression, and it's like, you know, amassing money and success and wealth and power. And sure, like, self-excellence is important, but the health of the structures around you, like the extended family, or is your family like getting together for cookouts and barbecues and Christmas? And, you know, do you feel like if, you know, if you had a niece or a nephew and they needed a job and you could help them out, right? Like that's the kind of the thing that like the old money wealth knows and they kind of keep from us, right? That's another sophon, is like, no, like have these strong families where you're spending time together. And that extends out to fraternities and communities, like having your bros that, you know, you can call up, that you can talk to, that you spend the time with, having like being involved in your community and being able to trust people and help people out. Right. Cause it's like someone, you know, I don't know, showed up at your house. Like, if you could like call up like five guys who showed up, like, you know, ready to go,
yeah, let's
like,
do this thing.
You know, you would never have a problem. Yeah. And it's like, great. If you're an individual guy who's competent, you know, that's good. And like, you need that, but like, there's so much more strength in that group. And so for me, that's the answer, right? Cause that's practical. That's actionable, right? We're talking about like, we don't really affect anything in the online, the international discourse. I think it's good to add your voice. Right. And I think that there's value in that on the individual level of like connecting and cathartically, like being part of that and having conversations and all that. There's value, but the real value that you can generate is the local value. It's the community, it's the family and stuff. And so when I look at these big accounts and I say, okay, are they promoting, you know, that's my answer to the open-ended version of that question. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, I become a LARPy, you know, version of whatever ideology, right? Because that's the problem that I see online, is everyone adopts these kind of like social groups, just like the left, right? Like, this is like, the right is no more immune to this mistake, these propagandas, as the left is, where, you know, the left's like, ah, yes, I am, you know, non-binary, whatever, you know, wolfkin, you know, whatever kind of like little kind of niche thing that they want to like carve out for themselves. Well, the right's like, oh, I'm like a Nietzschean bodybuilder. And it's just like, all right, cool. That's your LARP. That's like, you know, that's it's the same as being like Sith or Jedi in Star Wars or like Hufflepuff in like Gryffindor. Mm-hmm. It's like, cool, fine. Like have that thing that you're doing, but also realize there's something that matters that's, you know, that's transcendent to that. And you were talking earlier about like, what is the value that we as content creators and people who are just saying stuff online can do? And in my mind, it's illustrating to people, it's giving them intellectual tools for which they can understand the world around them and make better judgments. Right. And so if we can solidify in people's heads, like the value you can drive as an individual is local, like personal excellence and fraternal networking as a foundation for business, community, and family. That's kind of the tagline that I go by. And so when I look at like accounts like Zero HP, who's constantly like shitting on women and being like, oh, she could lose weight. Like, haha, great. Yes. Like we all know how to make fun of women online and, you know, yada, yada. But like, what value are you adding like to people's lives, right? Sure. Entertainment can be fun, right? But if you're really high IQ, right? If you're really someone who gets it and has the wisdom, what you want to do is through your art, through your content, through your creation, you're nudging people in a way that they're going to have a better life, right? Like good comedians will illustrate truths of the world and allow us to laugh at them in ways that like have them click a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, my thing is I've never been, I'm not like a funny guy. I'm not really like, you know, an entertaining person, right? I just love talking about these things and diving into them and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so that's what I lean into. I'm just trying to clearly illustrate what I think is valuable to people in a way that's accessible. That's the other thing is I don't try to like, you know, make myself seem cool by using like big words or, you know, like I try to create analogies or concepts or like philosophies or structures in ways that are easy and clean and digestible so that people can say, yeah, I understand now, like fraternal networking is good, right? Like I understand now that like I wrote another post about how one of the ways they keep us from building strong, healthy male relationships is by saying that any deep emotional male relationship is just gay. It's just homo-coded, right?
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, and it was funny too, because I was making this point and like literally someone in the comments was like, you're, you know, that's gay. And it's just like, look, if we're, because I was saying like, you shouldn't emotionally dump on your woman, right? Like your woman isn't like,
she doesn't care. To...
Yeah. Well, not only does she not care, but also women are a reflection of the energy that you give them. If you're loving and caring and you project confidence and this great vision for the future, like she'll be enamored by that. She'll love that. She'll get on board, right? Like she'll feel safe. She'll be able to reflect that love back to you tenfold, reflect it to your children, right? Like that's the beauty of women, is they are this source of like love and amplification of like energy. They're very connected into that spiritual divine thing. But if you're giving her concern and worry and you're like, oh, I don't know how we're going to make the rent, or like, ah, the world's like falling apart, or, you know, whatever, right? Guess what? She's not going to feel safe. She's not going to feel good. So she can't be that kind of emotional support for the deep concerns that you have. That's supposed to be your male friends. That's your fraternal network. Those are the guys that you go to, you have a beer with, and you're like, dude, shit's tough right now. Like, you know, lost my job. You know, I don't know how I'm going to make rent. Because the way that guys react to problems, hearing problems like that, are like, dude, we got you. We're going to solve this problem. That's the whole joke with like when women come to men and they're like, Stacy in accounting is being a bitch. You know, we're like, well, you know, like you could get her fired, or you want me to go in and talk to her? And she's like, no, I just want you to listen to my feelings. Like that, you know, that's how women react to problems. Mm-hmm. Men react to problems like, let's fucking go get Stacy and straighten this bitch out, you know, like whatever. Right. So it's, I think that, you know, we live in a world where, what we should be oriented to, the way that we should relate to women, the way that we should think about our lives and what to value and what to spend time on and where real foundations of power are, right. And healthy power. That's another big sophon, is like, oh man, people can't get rich. Only evil people want rich and wealth and power. And it's like, no, we want good people to be rich and wealthy and powerful, because those people are going to make the world around them better. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we live in this delusional, like, and we're so immersed in it, we don't even see it. Right. It's the fish in water kind of thing. And so I know
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I just went on a very long rant, but you know, that's kind of my stance on all this. Is there is a correct answer, and hopefully, like, the good people are trying to drive more understanding of that answer. They're illustrating it, and then, you know, then meet your mutuals and build those relationships and get to know people in person and, like, donate money to charity groups and go out and spend the time, because that's what's meaningful, right? And I think, like, we have this, and I'll kind of wrap the rant on this. We have this perception that the only way we can be successful is this huge overturning of the power structure. And that anything that isn't in service of that, that isn't going to come up with, like, an immediate solution, right? Any, you know, like, Fed posting aggressive stuff, right? If it's not that, then it's a waste of time, right? And to me, it's like, no, we got to play the long game, right? That is the, it's the doomer guy, right? Who's constantly thinking the world is over. The reason that meme is, it can be beneficial in that, like, there's some, you know, like, prepare and get stronger and, like, address problems, but it can be severely undermining in the sense that if you don't look at the future as something that you can build long-term projects into, where you're, you know, building that fraternal network or that family or that community that, you know, is a long-term investment. Like, family is the longest term investment. Ideally, you're having kids who have kids who have kids who have kids, you know, on and on and on. If you don't see a future, then you're not really going to be invested in doing that, right? And I think that more people need to realize that the battle that we're in is long-term. Yes, all of these horrible things, population decline, immigration, crime, government, yada, yada, it doesn't matter. Still have a family, still build your community, still invest in things, because if you don't, then you, what you do lose, right? There is no scenario where you don't have a family and, you know, things work out, right? So, you know, I think that that needs to be understood in our space, and the people who are not kind of moving us in that direction. You know, there's some people who are, their heart's in the right place. They just don't get it or whatever. I think that there's more people who are just literally trying to be subversive and, you know, amass power for themselves, right? If you're the head of a LARP, right, then you want as many people in the LARP and invest in the LARP as you possibly can be. So I think we need to get people out of the LARP and into, like, the community action, you know, LARP, maybe, you know, fake it till you make it. But anyway, that's how I judge people online. And that's my frustration largely with the space, is that the people who are undermining that healthy appreciation for, you know, family, community, long-term planning.
Yeah, man, definitely a lot there, and all good stuff, but I had, like, three or four different things, so I want to hit on one of them, and that's you know, you mentioned kind of, like, these people LARPing, and it's so funny to me because there's this concept of, like, a covert contract, right, where basically people want you to confirm their beliefs for them. If, like, I can get all these people to act like this, then it confirms that my belief is right. And really, like, I think all of us need to be of the perspective, especially as men, that, like, I don't care what their perspective is. Like, we could be friends, we could be cool, but, like, even all the people that I co-host shows with, you name the person that follows me on Twitter, I love all you guys. I'd buy you a drink tomorrow if you were in my town. But guess what? I'm still going to play in my band, whether you like it or not. I'm going to do this podcast if I want to do the podcast, whether anybody likes it or not. And then if all my social media gets deleted tomorrow, I'm going to continue to live my life because my daughter's going to be here shortly. I'm still going to be a husband. I'm still going to be a guitar player. I'm still going to be a mechanic. Like, all these things are still going for me, regardless of whatever take sellers say online. And I think, like, people who really just need confirmation of their LARP don't have this similar kind of setup for their life. Like if you see these people, they have to condescend down to people. They need people to confirm their worldview. It's like, well, why? Because if your worldview is right, then why do you need other people to like confirm this for you? And there is something to like, I need to hear other people out to make sure that I'm not being a retard. And this is something that I try to do frequently is like, okay, well, if I said this, do I sound like a quack to reasonable people? And it's not that that should be your only heuristic, but it's something to be aware of at all times. Like, am I going down the wrong path too far unnecessarily? That's something you need to be aware of. But at the same time, you also need to be true to yourself. So like, there's a fine line here, but I do think that, you know, you don't always need people to confirm everything about you. And I think that's a lot of what like these LARPers do. When people buy into the LARP, it's literally like cult like behavior where like, I need people to confirm this because if they don't, then, you know, it's the end of my world. But it's like, who cares? Like, this is just the internet. You should have a good enough life that like your network around you, oh, you are fine. Even if you disagree in your local network, it's like, yeah, we're still cool. Like you said, I got my boys. I could call up my band tomorrow. We're literally going out on their boat next weekend, and it's just going to be a good time. Like we're just going to enjoy life. We disagree about political stuff. We'll sit there and fucking talk about it. We're having a beer, something like that. Oh, hold on. I want to go, you know, jump in the river real quick. Let's go swim around. We'll get back on the boat, eat some, you know, peel and eat shrimp or something like that, and keep doing our thing. Like that should be the goal. Like you shouldn't be worried about people confirming your beliefs online. Like, I'm sorry, first name, bunch of numbers, your opinion isn't relevant.
Yeah. And I think you're, you know, we've touched on this point a few times already, which is like, look, the vast majority of people, they're good people. They want to do the right thing. And if you have this kind of mentality of like, they're still my friends, like, especially with my family, like I disagreed, you know, like 2016, you know, the rumors are true, right? Like I was on the left for when I was growing up. I didn't really think too much about politics. And like 2016 was the first time I was really paying attention that whole election cycle. And, you know, I started figuring things out. I basically like, I like to think that I like speed ran from like, you know, the left to all the way to, you know, to the right or whatever. And now I'm like, you know, just, I think it's more about truth than it is about anything else is what we're all trying to get at. But you know, like I disagreed very vehemently with parents, friends, you know, and part of it was I didn't understand how to disagree with them on these things. And I focused more on the ways that we disagreed than the ways that we did agree. Right. And now when I interact with friends, family, people in my community, I'm just like, yeah, like it's easier to do that now because I understand like, it's not about, you know, do we say the right thing or the wrong thing? Or do we think exactly the same on this, that, or the other thing? It's do we care about what really matters? And can we drive towards that? And, you know, if people have a misunderstanding, it's usually not because they're a bad person or you know, they want to be subversive or whatever it is. It's just like, we're all on our own path figuring it out. And, you know, the thing I say all the time too, is like, you know, if you want people to agree with you, become the best version of what your ideology can produce, right? Like be a good person, do interesting stuff, like be someone who's easy to be around, that people want to be around. And then like, eventually they'll ask, you know, they'll start picking up on the good things that you have to offer. And I think that's far more effective than trying to like scream down someone's throat about something.
Yeah. Well, one thing that kind of you had mentioned there towards the end that kind of reminded me of something that I was thinking about a little bit earlier is like, diversity is our strength always sounds so cringe, but like, would you think about that a little bit more, right? You start peeling this back a little bit and you think like, oh, actually like, okay, so I'm good at being a musician, let's say, or at least I hope people agree with that. But like, you know, hey, I'm good at this. My dad and I, we talk about this kind of stuff from time to time where it's like, there's some stuff we could do fixing the house and whatnot that, okay, we could handle this. But when it comes like the serious plumbing, oh, no. Well, like we don't do that because, hey, you know, my plumber, he's good at that. That's diversity because like, hey, he leaves the fixing cars to us. We leave the plumbing to him, right? We understand where we are in this whole hierarchy of issues. And even in like my workplace, like, okay, well, me and one other tech are like the two lead guys. We have all our training. We've been doing it for me, you know, 13 years, he's been doing it for 26, 27 years. So like, you know, we're kind of like the HNICs in this respect. Then there's the other guys who are still good at what they do, but they're not quite on that level yet, right? This is another example of diversity, which, I mean, you could use hierarchy for a different word, but like, I think of this, and even like when it comes to immigration, when people start talking about like, oh, you know, diversity in a country, like, no. I think like America being what it once was back in the 70s, you know, majority white Christian males who ran the country and are in the country, that made America great. And then you go over to Ireland, it's mostly Irish people. Yeah, exactly. Like all these countries are, you know, diverse compared to the other countries, but like you love that about that country because like, oh, this is specific to them. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is specific to to Yinzers, right? People who who say Yinz or, you know, buggy or certain words. Like there's certain things about every single city you're going to go to that you're like, oh, this is cool. And I like this about this city because, you know, if I go to New York City, it's not going to be like Pittsburgh. If I go to Pittsburgh, it's not going to be like Miami. That's cool. We don't want like this androgynous society where everything is just, you know, what's the word, like mellow and boring. You want to go to different places and see different things.
No, I agree. I think that, again, there's a lot of nuance with these ideas, and you're exactly right that like you want, I think of it as like biodiversity, right? Where, like when you think of like a biome of like, you know, animals, and you have like predator prey, you know, food chains, all that kind of stuff. Like the part of the beauty of that kind of like range of complexity is that it all kind of supports itself. It all plays, you know, different necessary roles, right? And like the value of that too is that if, you know, something comes through and, you know, you have giant forest fire or something like that, there's enough biodiversity that, you know, something will survive and adapt and change and all this kind of stuff. I think the philosophy that you're describing versus like the left and how they see diversity is they think difference is good for difference sake.
Yes.
And also that like that we shouldn't judge quality in those different realms. Right. For them, it's like, oh, you know, like this, you know, these plumbers are no better than those plumbers. And it's just like, no. Like there's certain guys who you like, do not want them near your plumbing. And then there's certain guys who are like, yeah, they're going to do the work. Right. And so, like that difference in the dimensionality of how we think about diversity. Cause again, that's like another SOFON, right? It's gotten in our way to appreciate diversity on the right, because that's such a heavily coded word towards like the left and this kind of, you know, this kind of like, you know, broken down low quality diversity that they're kind of like purporting to have, or, you know, they're creating categories that make no sense or whatever, right? But I want to live in a society where I have like an excellent guy who's really into plumbing, or, you know, someone who's like really into farming and growing stuff, or like, you know, people who are cooks. We were talking about this, I think, before the podcast, of like how much value there is in like committing to a very specific thing, because it you know, opens up so much more, you know, after that and through that. And I think that so much of how we talk about these things are, it's like limited by the reactionary nature of like realizing how bad society was and like trying to fix it. And like, we don't want to like bring over the wrong words but you know, I think we got to make sure we're not like hamstringing ourselves in kind of the range in which we can talk about this. Cause to your point, you know, there are good forms of diversity that we want. We just like, if things are running well, you don't make that, like if you don't make a perfect society better by adding like other things, right? It's like, you know, it's like, it's, you don't want diversity for diversity's sake, but there is healthy diversity. And then there's versions of that you do want.
Yeah. One thing that immediately came to mind when you were talking about that is basically like the left would see forced integration as like a necessary good because you're forcing diversity, but like diversity in regards of like, okay, well, this area here is this, and then this area over here is another thing, like appreciating their own domains and having borders between those domains and respecting that is very, very important. I think that's more of like how more of like a right wing perspective to kind of look at like these kind of things. Like I was saying earlier, I think about, you know, I've worked with General Motors now for over 10 years. I can look at someone like my dad who owns an independent shop and he works on all makes and models. Okay, well, he has to have a different tool set and a different knowledge set to do that. Whereas like, if you give me any GM vehicle, I'll be able to fix it. Or you go up the road to our, you know, my dealer chain's Honda store. those guys are going to be really good at Hondas. And then, you know, maybe if I need a favor, hey, do you know something about this Honda? Yeah, here's what you're missing. And then, you know, they could call me, hey, we have a GM. What do we do? This is what you have to do. And, you know, you respect people's specializations. And once again, to your point, this opens up the window after that. So, you know, bringing it back to music, playing music, it was like, okay, well, I got good at playing guitar. I get into a band and then we release music and then people hear it. And it's like, oh, we want you to come play this area. Or like, you know, we think you'd be good on a bill with this band, or, you know, this promoter heard you and they think you'd make, you do really good at this venue. Just when you specialize in one area, much to your point, it does open up more opportunities because people recognize and respect expertise, or people really just giving a fuck. Like we had a mold problem in my house, and I remember my wife looking like genuinely interested that somebody else gave a fuck about how to deal with mold in the house. Like, this sounds so dumb, but it's just like, when you see someone's passionate about something, you can't help but just be like, that's cool, because you know what, this person gives a shit about that and they want to do the right thing. And just when people get really anal about stuff, it's like, I don't know, this is like what they care about. This is what really animates this person. And you can't help but just love that about people in their respective lanes. It's just loving how passionate they are about something.
I agree. I think like it kind of dovetails nicely with the whole point about like networks, right? It's like the value of a network is you have all of these people who have specialized knowledge, right? And if you can just call on them when you need them, right? Like we like one of the ways to think about a good fraternal network is you should be able to say, I got a guy for that. Every time there's a problem, I got a guy for that, right? And like a guy that you know, that you've had drinks with, that you could like call up on the phone, right? And say, like, I lived on the East Coast for a long time in a little town just outside New York City. And like my local barber, right? Like I had his number, you know? Yeah. And like there were plenty of times my hair is way too long right now. I need to go get it cut. But like, you know, I just call him up or like send him a text to be like, hey, I'm in desperate need of a haircut. I've waited too long like I normally do. Do you have any time like today? And he'll be like, yeah, I'll fit you in, like, you know, come at this time. So, I think that's like the ideal place that you get to, or like, you know, have like a car mechanic like that, or, you know, you like, if, I know my, like I have some, I have an uncle who does, he does like construction and landscaping and a bunch of other stuff. He runs his own business. And like he knows the guys down at the lumber yard, right? Like he'll show up and just like throw a bunch of stuff and he's like, bill me, you know, like, you know, it's having those kinds of things, like that kind of community where, you know, it's high trust, right? Everyone's kind of like collaborating, helping each other out. Like I'm working on this networking article right now. Mm-hmm. And it's both kind of a explanation for the rationale behind networking, because I think one of the common reactions that people have to like intentional networking is, well, you're just trying to like exploit people, right? You're just trying to bring them in and get them to do something or whatever. And it's like, well, you know, all communication is somewhat manipulative, right? My goal right now as I'm conveying these ideas is to manipulate your mind into understanding what I'm getting at, right? But if I am trying to do that with the intention of like really revealing truth to you, then that's good, right? Like I don't see that communication is inherently bad. And I think similarly with networking, it's like, yes, you can network for personal gain and for manipulation and control and all this kind of stuff. Yes, networking can be bad when used poorly, or used for bad ends. But if your ends are to create social structures that are healthy, that are positive, that are collaborative, right? Like the interesting thing about that is, like, you know, you can put, you know, a little bit of effort in, right? And that's the whole idea of a network, is you're going to get more out than you put in. But that's not because you're, you know, taking advantage of people or extracting stuff. It's like, that's how networks should work. They should be win-wins, right? Like you should have like your guy who's, you know, the plumber dude, right? And he's just going to be able to fix that problem way easier than you, right? And so you were kind of exploitative in the sense that like you got an hour of his time and you saved yourself like eight, right? But similarly down the line at some point, you know, you're going to be able to help him out or make a connection to him or just, you know, whatever it is, right? And that's the beauty of these things, is they're extremely empowering for everyone who's involved, right? That high trust goes a long way, and they're not, it's not about exploitation. And the last thing I'll say on this is, you know, I had a post about how one of the most important things that parents can pass on to their children is not just money or, you know, wisdom or insight or any of those kinds of things. Like that's definitely helpful, right? But the most important thing is if a parent spent a bunch of time creating a family around them, an extended family that has, you know, these healthy family gatherings and this good cohesion, and they care about each other and they love each other, and then they've invested in the community around them, and the community is well knit and, you know, is building things that are going to be, you know, valuable in the long term. And then they have this fraternal network so that, like, when their kid, you know, starts looking for a job, they can reach out and introduce them to people and do all this kind of stuff, right? And so, you know, the idea is that when that parent passes on, right, they're not just leaving the kid in kind of this isolated state where I was like, I've given you all the tools and, you know, go figure out the world, right? It's I've given you all these tools, but I've also connected in with this network, this extension of myself that's going to positively, like, love and care and support for you. And the idea is that, like, you know, I've created not just like a good child who's going to be successful. I've created a world around that child that's going to help take care of that child. And hopefully that child also puts energy into that, and that helps them and their children and so on and so forth. That's what society is. I think that's what the boomers have forgotten, is they've become very very economically minded. I call, like, the new version of the kind of the mainstream delusion, as I used to call it. I call it delusional utopian consumerism, right? It's like everything's perfect, everything's okay, and the most important thing is GDP line goes up, right? And you see this all the time with the boomers, where they're just like, oh, you know, like, you know, if I get sick or whatever, I'll just hire someone or go to hospice care, or, like, you know, if I want to enjoy myself, I'm going to, like, pay for a cruise, right? It's not, you know, they're not thinking about, like, barbecuing with their neighbors or, you know, building these relationships or doing all these kinds of things. And so, like, I think that's a mindset that we need to start moving towards more often. And it's, and I think the other thing is, like, you clearly grew up in a community where that was much more prevalent, right? That you know, you seem to have, like, a very good thing going on between the bandmates and the different kind of, like, groups that you run and all that kind of stuff. And for me, that was, you know, I had that a little bit growing up, because I, you know, I think, like, you know, the parents just inherently, like, you know, you go to, like, the PTA groups, or, you know, you have your your, you know, we did, like, Boy Scouts and other sports teams and stuff like that. But, like, I look back on my parents now, and they don't really have that same connection. It was, like, through their kids, but they've kind of largely taken a step back. Whereas I think that, you know, there's probably a lot of people like me who, like, we feel a little less connected, a little bit more isolated. Like, our parents didn't put in that energy to kind of pass those relationships off. And it's also a part of, like, going to college in a different state and then going to get a job in another state completely. And you're not really, a lot of people are not, like, you know, staying around their hometowns as much, but, like, reorienting people towards that, showing them the value of that. I think there's like that, if we are to be successful, and I know I keep harping on it in this conversation that we're having, but I think it really does come down to reinvigorating these, like, social networks, these, you know, keep getting people to care about family, fraternity, and community.
Yeah, I completely agree, though. And I think it's necessary to harp on that, because I've been thinking about this a lot, because I'm sure people are sick of hearing me talk about my daughter to be here soon, but I keep thinking, like, okay, well, I have to understand a few things, right? She's going to be an autonomous person one day, and everything I do, even if I think I did the exact right thing, there could still be an absolute catastrophe laying on the other side of that. The other thing that I think about too is, like, okay, well, how do I send her into, you know, when she's 18, an adult, if she wants to go to college? Okay, well, like, in my opinion, the ideal situation isn't necessarily that she goes to college, but those that she's fostered a good relationship with somebody, and then, you know, my wife and I have given her enough that, like, hey, if I want to start a family right now, I could do it and not worry about it at all. Like, that to me is, like, the goal state. But then I also have to understand, like, she's 18, she may not want to do that, and that is just completely out of my control. But much of that point, it's like, okay, well, hopefully,
I would say it's out of your control.
But, it, like, for the most, or I don't, I don't think anybody really knows exactly how much, you know,
not to make the whole big deal out of this, but I do think that one of the mistakes that we've made in the modern world, especially like fathers, is this idea of, if I give my daughter like freedom to make her own decisions, that's out of love, right? That's out of like care and appreciation. And like, I want her to be herself. Mm-hmm. But I also think that you can have that. And you can also have this understanding of like a father as like, I'm the protector, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm supposed to keep her from making bad mistakes. Me, and then you know, you'll probably have, what, like 50 sons as well, and all, you know, and like all this kind of stuff, right? And like, the responsibility of all of the men in the family is to protect the women, right? Is to keep them from making bad decisions, right? Yeah. It's to, when she brings the boyfriend over, to like take him aside and show him your gun collection, and, you know, like insinuate that no one will find him if, you know, he does anything, you know, in the wrong way that isn't gentlemanly, like, right? And so I think that like, that's part of the reason, you know, and we like, we understand this like intrinsically when we talk about like strippers have like daddy issues, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, what's, you know, so like, I almost feel like it would be better to have like for fathers to be more overbearing than less. Right. So because I know that what you're saying, like, it comes from a place of love. Like, you absolutely want your daughter to like live a good life and feel like empowered to make her own decisions. But part of me is also like, when I have a daughter, like I almost wanted like arrange marrier, you know, like that would kind of be, you know, the thing is like, you know, just be like, no, this is a guy who I know is it, or, you know, and, you know, I think that in the modern world, you do it in a way where you're not pushy. You're not like, you know, like,
yeah,
you will marry him or whatever. Right. But you're like, you know, you're talking them up, you're spending time with their families or whatever. Right. Cause one of the things, it was like a couple months back, I was talking to a friend about this, but it's, you know, not just caring about our children, but also caring about our grandchildren. Right. Mm-hmm. And cause that could be like seen as an even better metric of success of like, yeah, you made another generation, and realizing that the people that you have around you in your community, right, they're not immediately family, right? They're close, right? But the real thing is, you might be family through your grandchildren, right? Like, the guys that you hang out with now, right, could have children that your children, you know, have children with, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like very important to think about like, who are the people you want to be around, right? It's like, would, you know, if Sam had a bunch of kids, you know, would you want Sam's sons, you know, spending time with your daughters, that kind of thing, right? Like, probably way better than like, you know, the vast majority of like random people out there, right? Like, cause you know, right? Like, you'll both hold each other to account. And so I think that's like a thing is like, you know, we want the best for people. But it's that hyper individualism, freedom of choice thing. It's like, sometimes I kind of like, you know, like it sounds like a hot take and kind of contradictory, right? To be like, I love my children enough that I'm going to like dictate what's good for them. But, you know, it's like, you know, finding the right balance there, I think. But yeah, so sorry to like kind of jump in on you though.
No, that's okay. But that's kind of like the ultimate question, because I try not to like dive super into my childhood or anything like that. But like, I moved around a lot. And childhood wasn't like the worst thing in the world, but definitely could have been better. That being said, I understand that like, there was a lot of suffering I went through that I would not be as prosperous. That's actually a really good comment. Free will can be guided morally. There was a lot of stuff that I went through as a kid that like, I wouldn't wish on anybody. But I realized that like, I came out on the other end of it a lot better for it. So it's like, okay, well, my wife and I are walking into this. I like, the house I live in now is the house that I bought. And it just so happens to be the nicest house I've ever lived in my entire life. And it's not like I spent ass loads of money. I mean, a dollar goes a far way here in Pennsylvania, but like, to the point, my daughter, and then hopefully next few kids, will have a much better life than I had. Okay. Well, looking at it, it's like, okay, well, if you give somebody everything they want, specifically kids, then that can, not always, but it may turn them into assholes because they feel entitled. You spoil them.
Sure.
What's this happy medium of like, okay, you're imposing some necessary level of suffering because you see the big picture. They're not going to see it, and you have to understand they're not going to see it. like these thoughts are always running through my mind. I honestly, I don't think there's anybody that really knows like the perfect formula for this. I think it's kind of like a trial by fire. And everybody says, oh, you know, I'm never going to lie to my kids. I'm never going to do this. And I'm one of those people right now. But though I also have to realize like there's going to be a time when my daughter, you know, the podcast schedule slammed. I had a shit day at work. I had a bad workout. Mm. Everything in the day, every single star lined up to say, fuck Kyle on this day. How do I, in that moment, make sure I don't take the easy way out and just say some bullshit to my daughter to get her off my back? Mm. And, you know, when I could just take a little bit more discomfort in that second to orient myself and her in a better direction. Like those are the kind of things I think about constantly, because it's never in the moments that like right now I'm happy, right? My wife and I just went out and had dinner. I had a margarita. Life is good. Dinner was good. You know, we rode back home smiling and laughing and everything. Mm-hmm. It's never these moments that you just break. It's like I said, the stars align. They all say, fuck you. And you had a shit day and your daughter is just right pushing you right over the edge. Once again, how do you stay strong in those moments? I don't think anybody has a good answer for it. I think it's, like I said, trial by fire, and you always hope you do the best, because I agree with you that most people mean well, but it's just in those moments of weakness, maybe they do let the worst parts of themselves take over and then orient themselves for the worse rather than the better.
Sure. And I think like this is a question that I got a lot when I was running like the weekly Sunday spaces, and it was like, how do you know if you're a good person? And it's like, well, look, you're never going to be a perfect person. Right.
Right.
But the person who's good, and is the way I see it, is like, do you care about being a good person? And do you think critically about how to, you know, display that through your actions, right? Like how to actually be good with the things that you do. Right. And so when I'm listening to you talk about this, right, it's like, you clearly care, right, about being a good father and doing the right thing. And I think that is, to your point, like good parents are supposed to be a representation of the world that their kids are going to have to live in, mm-hmm. right? Because at some point you're not going to be around, right? That's kind of the whole idea, right?
Right.
And so you want them to be able to operate effectively in the world, the real world, without you having to be their guardian, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you get them to realize how to operate in the world, right? Well, it's not to shelter them from things and pretend everything's fine and hunky-dory and just always perfect all the time, right? It's to be realistic, but not more. You don't want to cause more suffering than is necessary for them to learn that, right? I think that's what you're effectively saying. And so, you know, that's the question, is like, how do we don't want ignorant kids. We don't want ones who aren't street smart and, you know, poorly equipped to deal with the world, right? But how do we do that in a way that they're not going to become entitled, or they're not going to become fearful, right? And to your point, I don't think anyone has the perfect answer, but I think that the magic, if there is some sort of like magical thing that you can do, it's to care, right? It's to think critically and to be aware and intentional with what you want to do. And that's how I see a lot of the content that I create, is trying to illustrate on a meta level, what are these kind of patterns for flourishing, right? What are the transcendent things that we can orient towards that will generally be good? And to not be prescriptive and say, hey, you have to do this or that or whatever, right? It's not like a specific action that you have to take. It's just kind of awareness of these things. And so I think, you know, your point is really well taken, where it's like, you know, we want them to be successful. We just don't understand, like, you know, we don't want to make the mistake of making it too easy or too hard, right? Cause more suffering or, you know, risk ignorance. And so, you know, finding that middle line, it's funny. I saw this like LinkedIn post where it was like, every white dude giving advice is always like, it's not black or white. There's always some sort of balance, you know? And, you know, it's just, every time I say there's nuance, I'm like, fucking LinkedIn post is running through my head, but it is true, right? Like there is a balance to all of these things.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, it's something that I think about a lot, and I talk to other parents about it, and like I said, it's never clear to me what the exact answer is, but, you know, even like this ties back to like having political conversations. It's just that, you should always try to talk to people you disagree with and agree with and figure out if you're getting it wrong, if you're getting it right, or, you know, try to get different perspectives, because most people in this sphere, right, have some kind of angle. They have a perspective that they want other people to agree with or that they think is right because of the information they consumed. So how are you conscious of that while also realizing that, like, okay, maybe what you know is true versus what they know is true? Like, there's always just, I feel like I'm always just taking in all these different perspectives. And when I see somebody that's so bought in, I always think of this line that I hear, somebody I watch say quite a bit. He said, it's not the people who have questions that scare me. It's the people who have no questions that scare me. And like that to me, I see people who are so convicted and just cannot be wrong no matter what, I'm like, I don't know if I have anything to learn from you because you're not curious anymore, right? Like I said towards the beginning of the conversation, you could find me in the first couple hundred, you know, probably first 100 episodes saying things that I would completely disagree with now. And then, you know, even like music views, I used to hate Slayer. Now I love Slayer. It just constantly, I'm trying to evolve and learn and incorporate new information. I think this is very important to keep in mind in any avenue. It's just that, like, you should always consider, am I wrong or could I be doing better?
Yeah, no, kind of going back to the whole like meta philosophy, strategy, approach, right? Like, it is those things that I care about. It's like, are you thinking about what is good, right? And trying to orient yourself towards it, which requires self-awareness. That's a very big part of this. It's just trying to kind of look at yourself critically, look at the world around you critically. And then it's about intention, right? It's like, okay, I've thought about what's good. I've thought about my life, the context that I live in, the decisions that I have in front of me. I feel like this is the right decision to make. Am I then, once I know that that is the decision that I'm landing on, am I making the effort to enact that, to drive that into reality? And I think like that's really the best you can ask. And then you kind of go through cycles of like, okay, I've been really intentional about driving towards this goal. Like, let me take a step back and reassess. Is this really the goal I want to be oriented towards? Am I really kind of considering all the factors? And then am I really intentional to the degree, right? Like, you have that kind of reflective cycle. And, you know, it's funny, right? Because a lot of this kind of these ideas of meta strategy or philosophy was really born out of looking at tech startups and a lot of the work philosophy around that. Because I think that, you know, software is very cerebral stuff, right? It's all like, you know, in cyberspace and you can kind of do what you want. And so they generate kind of like a meta strategy for work. If you're looking for books to read, there's this book by this guy, Elijah Goldratt, and he wrote this book called The Goal, and it's all about factory workflow optimization. It's pretty interesting stuff. You might actually find that there's like pretty relevant to some of the auto mechanics things, and maybe even like, you know, music development and all this kind of stuff. But the book I really like that kind of followed that one was called The Phoenix Project. It was written by a bunch of guys who were basically the early version of what DevOps engineers would become. And DevOps, if you're not familiar, basically the infrastructure guys. They not only build kind of like the Docker, Kubernetes, cloud cluster, you know, scalable system stuff that you might hear about, but they also facilitate a lot of the software development, because usually when you develop software, when you're writing code, it has to be in a specific environment that is similar to the production environment where it will actually be live and hosted. And so you have to have these you know, testing environments, and then you have to push that code to production in a way that you're not pushing things that will generate errors and break things and whatnot. And so there's this whole structure to how you build and produce code. But The Phoenix Project is all about best practices, borrowing heavily from Elijah Goldratt's The Goal. And they're in this work philosophy format. So it's like a story about this guy who takes over like the IT department. He gets randomly promoted because somebody leaves at this auto parts company. And so it's about him like trying to get a handle of the situation. And there's these very, very interesting characters, the obnoxious girl boss in leadership, who's constantly like forcing them to go faster with the projects, which inevitably breaks things. And so they have to like learn how to like resist pressure from leadership to do things before they're ready. And, you know, it's like a lot of stuff. A lot of people, this is like my highest recommended book, because I do a lot of interviews in tech and, you know, in that field and whatnot. And the people who do read it, they're always like, oh yeah, like this guy's exactly like Brent or, you know, whatever. And so they'll talk about that stuff. But the point that I'm getting at there is that the like meta strategies for work and work kind of like structuring how to do work, it's very similar to like the meta myth, like Joseph Campbell's The Meta Myth is actually teaching you how to solve a problem. And that's the reason that it's like fundamental to every single story is the most important thing that you can teach the next generation is just problem solving, right? It's like, start with the knowledge that you know, go out into the world, like you have your problem that presents itself, that's the call to action. The wise old man giving you the item of power, that's the knowledge from the past, right? That's being passed on to you as you go and adventure out into the new, right? And you have trials and tribulations and difficulties, and the death and rebirth is like the death of the knowledge that no longer works and the birth of new knowledge that does. And that's what allows you to, you know, conquer the great evil, right? Solve the problem and then, you know, rescue the damsel in distress or, you know, win the gold or, you know, whatever, that's the reward, right? And then you return to the village and that's bringing the knowledge back, right? It's the problem solving thing. And like Ray Dalio wrote a book on this. He's like the founder of Bridgewater. Interesting dude, but he wrote like Ray Dalio's principles, and it's largely borrowing from that. And I think he's bit by a similar like meta philosophy bug. And I kind of liked a lot of his stuff. And so, I think the Phoenix Project's very similar in that regard, right? But all of this to say that that cycle of, you know, awareness, defining goals, awareness of like all the elements of the problem, you know, coming up with a solution, then like using the intention to drive it through, and then just kind of constantly iterating as you go and being self-reflective, like very applicable to your life. But I think the other thing to caveat that with is like, we live in a society where we're constantly on this, like this career track of like, you got to keep moving up, you got to keep doing this, that, and the other thing. And I think, you know, it's tough because we don't have a lot of that guidance, right? Like we used to, especially like families used to be a lot closer generationally, where, you know, that your father could help you raise your children. And, you know, kind of that knowledge was passed down and people were more kind of closely connected. And, you know, now we live in a world where it's like really tough to have cohesive families, and like all of the ideas in the mainstream are very counter, and we don't have as strong a community. And so you do have to largely know so much of this on your own. And so it does take like intentionality and hard work and stuff like that, but also to the point, like going out in the boat with the guys and stuff like that, I think more people need to just touch grass, get out there, relax, enjoy your weekends. Yeah. You know, I brought it all back. Yeah, we did it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably a good place to put a little bow on it, man. We'll definitely have more conversations in the future, but, yeah, I think you wrapped it up pretty nice there, man. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. I enjoyed the conversation we had on your show. So like I said, there will definitely have to be more. When I was looking down here, I was making sure I wrote down the book that you recommended there, because I'm already like hearing archetypes in my mind of people that I worked with throughout my career. So better go ahead. If you got anything to plug, if you got any final thoughts, anything you want, floor is yours.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, always a great time. You know, added you to a few of the group chats, and I feel like it's been great having you in there. Yeah, as far as like my content, so man, you know, life's been crazy. You know, it's one of those things where I do this for fun. I'm not getting paid or anything like that. And so like, you know, I've been kind of lax with getting out the podcast, and I'll have people on and stuff like that. And that's all up on YouTube and whatnot. But I'm spending a little bit of time writing this networking article. I think that's like, kind of running double duty for me, because one, it's something that I've been wanting to talk about and get out there for people, but also it's a reaffirmation of like the things that I need to be doing in my network that can be done a little bit better, right? And so I'm kind of going through a rebrand of my content. I'm trying to update that and better structure that. I mean, one of the goals there is, you know, hey, look, I know I don't have a huge audience or, you know, a ton of people following, but the people who do are pretty kind of on this wavelength we were talking about earlier with like the beacons and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, my goal has always been, and I've had a lot of success with this already, is just connecting people, like saying, hey, yo, you know, you're in Pennsylvania, you should go hang out with these guys who, you know, do some pretty interesting stuff. I don't know if you guys have gotten the chance to catch up, but, you know, like, you know, I'm going, traveling a little north, as I'm going to like do a little bit of traveling the next month. And, there's a bunch of guys who don't know each other, but know of each other. And I'm going to like, we're going to have like a dinner and bring a bunch of people together and stuff like that. And so, the thing that I would say is like, if anyone's hearing these ideas about fraternity and community and family and resonates with that, you know, that's, I'm expanding that network. Right. And I'm always happy to introduce other people with other people. Like, you know, you got to meet your mutuals, you got to meet people in person and build those relationships. And so that's the big thing. I have a Substack. I'm obviously on X. I have a website. It needs to be updated with all the Midjourney like animation stuff. I'm probably going to be doing some fun stuff with that. So, but a lot of this content, it's meant to be broadly accessible, not like a like spicy aesthetic or anything like that. Just trying to get at truth. And those who are interested, want to get involved, you know, feel free to reach out. My DMs are always open. But Kyle's, it was a pleasure. I'm glad we got the chance to connect, man. You know, Sam speaks highly of you. I've been, you know, watched some of your shows. And so I forget, it was like one of the group chats and people were like talking you up. And I was like, I got to reach out to this guy. And yeah, the music project stuff's been going, it's pretty cool. I've got a bunch of friends who are starting to, we're pretty big into that. And hopefully, like, I don't know, I'm really excited because I feel like we're on the verge on the online sphere of like this next thing, right? This this very like wholesome, positive thing. And you know, the more kind of people, the more I've been online and kind of been sorting like the people who are on the right wavelength, like, you know, so it was great running across your content. And yeah, man, pleasure chatting, and thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Well, I'd love to hear that because I feel like there is like a next thing that has to happen sometime soon. And I don't know what that's going to look like, but you know, I'm going to keep doing my thing. A Common Crown is going to put out new music. And I just got this feeling like this is going to be the shit. And like, maybe it's not, maybe it, you know, does all right. People like it, but regardless, I'm kind of looking at all this stuff. I'm like, I'm in a good place right now. So, I guess I should probably put my final thoughts here as well. And that's, I walked off stage, it probably would have been about 8:45 on Saturday night. And that is the last time that I'll walk off stage without a physical daughter here in the world. And to me, that's just absolutely insane. The next time I step on stage will be before Hinder on September 13th. So I know it's a little bit of like shameless self-promotion here, but it's crazy for me to think about this, and it's been a crazy journey over 400 episodes and meeting up with people like you and kind of this whole networking deal. And I think that there's a lot of good going on right now. And all the content I do, I always do because I do have the absolute love for people in mind. And, you know, if you can't tell, I'm a very gregarious person. I love spending time with people. I love talking to people about ideas and different things. I am a people's person. So to meet up with people like you and who kind of share this vision of getting people out there and together, it's just awesome. And I'm glad that you're doing it. And I'm glad that it seems like other people are kind of getting around to this as well, because I think when you get offline and you meet people in person, you have a barbecue, you go to a concert, you go out for drinks or something like that, all like the ancillary bullshit of this person's 1% Jewish or this person's not a libertarian or whatever thing you want to spurg about that day, it's just gone and nobody cares. And you realize, oh, there's a person right in front of me right now. We have a lot in common and we're just going to have a good time right in this moment. And that is so much more important about knowing the intricacies of this policy, this foreign conflict or anything, that it just the personal connections you build with people through this kind of stuff, one more time, is just infinitely more important.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely the touch grass methodology for life is undefeated.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm at it one more time. Thank you, man. And I think we'll call her a show there, man.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Of course.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good.
Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.